This September, for me, is a month filled with weddings. Over Labor Day weekend, I officiated the wedding of my sister-in-law and her fiancé. 2 days ago, I was in Beacon, New York, standing next to a roaring waterfall as two people committed themselves to each other. And in less than 2 weeks, I'll be in the foothills of Colorado, officiating the wedding of one of my good friends from high school. Each one of these weddings is different. Each one is unique. And each one is filled with rituals. From the ceremony to the reception, each couple has its own vision of how their day will go. The music will be done in a certain way, and the DJ will play specific songs at the exact right time. The centerpieces on the table during the reception will be big or small, full of flowers or with candles floating in water. The ceremony will include traditional vows that are repeated, or vows written by the couple themselves, or I'll recite the words and wait for that very simple but very powerful I do. For the couple and their families, each part of the wedding event is a ritual that requires careful consideration, time, and attention. But there are other rituals at weddings, too. And one of my favorite is, as a guest, the ritual of standing at a table, looking at a sea of name cards, and trying to find the table I'll be sitting at during the reception. There's usually a table at the entrance covered in name tags or a poster with the seating chart printed out, and once I find my name, I then scan all the other names, trying to see who is sitting at the table with me. This ritual of finding our table mates can be nerve-wracking. We want to sit with people we know, but what if we don't? Are the people who'll be sitting with us going to be like us, or will they be totally weird? Or maybe we're the weird one and we just don't know it yet. These and countless other concerns and fears zip through our heads when we're standing at the seating chart, trying to figure out who we are eating with. And these same feelings and anxieties about who is sitting at our table was right there in the city of Rome when Paul wrote his letter 2,000 years ago. Today's reading from the letter to the Romans is our last selection from that book for a while. We spent this whole summer discovering how this community of non-Jews struggled connecting their culture to their faith. The Romans hoped the teachings from this Jew named Jesus would help them master their passions, those feelings and emotions that stop them from being their best selves. The rules and rituals and methods they saw in Jesus' teaching seemed to provide a way to turn these Romans into the best Romans they could possibly be. Yet the rules weren't so simple to understand. Different people interpreted the rules in different ways. Even when this small community of believers ate together at the first century version of coffee hour, conflict happened. Now, this wasn't a battle between vegetarians and omnivores, even though verse 2 sort of sounds like it is. The problem was really about where the meat came from. Meat in the ancient world was very expensive. Few people could afford to eat meat on any kind of regular basis. Instead, people waited for these animals to be given out after they were used in a sacrifice. The animals would be led into a temple dedicated to some god or goddess. They would be prayed over, blessed, and then ritually slaughtered. Once the ceremony was over, the meat was served to anyone who needed it. For some in the Roman community, this meat was free and anyone could eat it because, well, those gods and goddesses didn't exist. But others felt eating such meat would violate the food laws that even Jesus might have followed. The act of sacrifice made the meat unclean, and in the eyes of God would harm anyone who ate it. So at the same table and during the same meal, there would be those who ate meat and those who didn't. And each side, at a minimum, would see the others as being totally weird. Yet Paul's vision of Jesus broke the Romans' expectations. The meat wasn't really important. Rather, it was the people at the table who mattered the most. Since their baptism put them in a public relationship with Jesus, their relationship with each other mattered too. They were no longer just individual Romans trying to live their best lives. They had put on Jesus and are now the hands and feet, arms and legs of God's Son. Even though their bodies might feel like they did before, and they might still struggle with their thoughts, emotions, and passions that cause them to sometimes hurt those around them, these Romans were no longer just themselves. They're Jesus, too. They carry with them all the promises God makes to all of us, a promise of love, presence, and fidelity. Jesus gave himself fully over to the task of reconciling the world to its creator, to the task of showing love to those who shouldn't be loved, and saying that everyone, including you, has value. Jesus devoted himself to his neighbors. He gave himself to a world that didn't fully understand him, and who killed him for sharing his table with people he wasn't supposed to. We can imagine Jesus at that wedding in Canaan, finding his name on a little card, seeing his table number and refusing to scope out who he might be sitting with. Instead, he would be the first at the table, ready to welcome and care for all who sit by him, whether they realized he was Jesus or not. Our ritual of trying to foresee or maybe even control who we sit with is replaced by a Jesus who is already at the table, ready to eat and share and love whoever shows up. This kind of ritual isn't a ritual that is easy. It's an approach to life that is downright scary. It means we have to talk to people, to all kinds of people, and learn who they are and what their story is. We need to know who at the table eats meat, who doesn't, and why. We also need to know ourselves well, to discover any side eyes of judgment we're throwing around at those near us. And we need to be flexible in our own way of life so that we can adjust to the needs of whoever God puts in our path. Living this kind of life takes work. It does take effort. It takes an imagination and a faith that knows we won't be doing this work on our own. Instead, we get to live this kind of life because Jesus has already given his life for each of us. We get to serve our neighbor, to bear their burdens, to share their tables, and to help them thrive. Because the Lord, each and every day, helps us stand gracefully, faithfully, and wonderfully tall. Amen.